Chair for this meeting. My name is Oscar Ortiz. I'll be the chair for this meeting. Do we have a quorum, Erica?
Chair, we do not have a quorum.
Okay.
Can wait a couple minutes or move ahead with the announcements and informational items?
Okay, yeah, let's go ahead and do you have any director comments?
I do,
Chair,
if
you
I
did.
may. Hi, everybody. This is Charles Townsend. I just want to say this is my last meeting with you guys. I have decided to retire, as I'm sure you all know, and we have three new council people coming into the Rancho Mirage City Council. It's the biggest change in 20 years that we have had there, and it was just time for myself to move on. And the same for Iris. I will speak for her that she decided to retire also. So I wish everybody the best at CVAG. And Tom Kirk, I still remember you when my pants split when I first came on the CVAG committee. And you came up behind me and walked me all the way out to my car. I will never forget that.
That's a good
It was
story.
love at first sight, Tom. Thank you, everybody. And Linda, congratulations to you, my love. You work so hard. You really do. And you deserve the best. And your city is very, very lucky to have you at the helm.
Thank you.
So.
It's a team effort. I've enjoyed working with you and seeing your inspiration and lots of other things, Charlie. I have a question. Do you all
Sure.
leave a manual on what not to do or what to do on CV Link for the new council members, or can we start from scratch?
You know what? I think it's going to be from scratch, and I'm sure that Linda, I'm sure it will come up in the near future, my love. But just remember one thing, it has to go back to the voters.
Understood. I'm
So
an optimist.
I hear you. So, you know, stay tuned, film at 11 on that
Thank
one.
you.
But
Best
thank
of
you,
luck to you and
everybody. I
Kelly.
really do appreciate being a part of it. I will miss you all deeply, but I know you all do. So God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend, and we really appreciate you for all the work that you do for our community. And we enjoyed having you here as well.
Thank you, Oscar. I
Thank
appreciate
you. Mrs. Nistande?
Yes, Charlie, I just want to say you and I go back a long way,
Long,
predating
long.
your
Yes.
interest in politics. And I will miss you, but hope to see you out and about. Thanks so much, Charlie.
Thank you, and say hi to your husband. And I would love to get together with you guys too. So bless
Absolutely.
you both. Thank you. Thank
Okay.
you.
Any other comments?
Chair, I do have a couple of comments too.
Go ahead.
One of those is related to the date of your next meeting. We set it on the agenda that it's going to be January 12th. It will actually be February 9th. On January 12th, as the CVCC just discussed, there will be a tour of CVC lands from La Quinta down towards the Salton Sea, and we're going to need to reschedule or perhaps not have a January E&E meeting. There is a special meeting. We'll certainly work with you, Chair, and the rest of the committee to schedule it appropriately. Secondly, as committee member Nastande, and I believe that's the last meeting had discussed in different ways electric vehicle infrastructure and what might be needed given governmental mandates and what's coming down the line, and for that matter, governmental opportunities. There's a lot of money out there for electric vehicle infrastructure. We do plan on digging into that and providing a perhaps an agenda item at your next meeting related to electric vehicle infrastructure.
Good news. Thank you, Mr. Kirk.
My pleasure. And Erica, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe we have a quorum now. All
Yes, we do. Well, we should take roll call, Chair.
right, yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Good afternoon, committee members. Agua Caliente, Banda Quilla Indians.
President Vincent Gonzalez.
City of Blythe. City of Cathedral City. City of Cat City of Coachella, Coachella Valley Water District, City of Desert Hot Springs, Imperial Irrigation District?
Present.
City of Indian Wells? City of Indio?
Present.
City of La Quinta?
Linda Evans, present.
Mission Springs Water District?
Nancy Wright, here.
City of Palm Desert?
Here.
City of Palm Springs?
Dennis was here.
And City of Rancho Mirage?
Charles Townsend, here.
Riverside County 4th District? And Riverside County 5th District?
Russ Martin, sitting in for Supervisor Hewitt.
Chair, you have a quorum.
Thank you. I will move on to public comments on agenda items. Do we have any public comments?
Chair, we received no written comments, and I see no hands raised at this time.
Thank you. We'll go back to member and director comments. Do we have any other comments from our members? Seeing none, I do just want to say congratulations to everyone for making it through another election cycle. We appreciate your commitment to serving our residents and the Coachella Valley here as candidates and as representatives. So thank you for all you do, and congratulations on making it through another election cycle. I also had a meeting with the Southern California Association of Governments Energy and Environment Committee. Two of the interesting discussions we had was, one of them was Yucaipa's efforts on building out the new wine country in their area, and some of the zone changes and incentives that they provided to convert some of those areas previously zoned for homes and commercial activity and turning that into farmlands and wine production and tourism. Another thing we discussed was some of the racial equity baseline conditions for the 2021 report. And that tracked about 54 indicators on subjects that are related to economic mobility and transportation and poverty, and how those affect different demographics, and how these indicators can help us in our Connect SoCal plans for the future of transportation and development for our region. And that's all I have for those. So we'll go back and go on to consent calendar. Do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
So moved.
Looking to second.
All right. We have a motion from JB Hamby. Is that right? And then a second from Linda Evans. And then do we do the roll call vote, or just all in favor say aye, or raise your hand, please?
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any opposed? All right, motion passes. Thank you. We'll move on to discussion and action items. Item 6A, presentation from IID, Growth and Economic Development Proposal. And we have Jamie Asprey.
Good afternoon, and thank you for having us here today. We have, as you all are sort of aware, there's a significant amount of pent-up demand for growth and development in both the Coachella and Imperial Valleys. And we've experienced some issues because IID's existing regulations govern cost responsibility for that growth and development. And our cost model is very similar based on cost causation principles. If you drive the need for upgrades to the system, if you drive the need for growth, growth pays for growth. So our existing regulations provide for some developer relief by way of reimbursement from third parties that are later movers and use the infrastructure. But we're finding that that is not significant enough relief, as the growth has consumed much of the available capacity in the system. And we're now at the point that upgrades are significant. We're clearly aware that additional infrastructure upgrades and additional generation resources necessary to provide electrons to power those upgrades are necessary for additional growth. The demand of growth has required what we estimate to be, based on known projects in the Imperial and Coachella Valleys, of between $400 and $500 million, most of which is attributed to the need for new substations. That infrastructure is very expensive. It requires transformation. You have to bring in larger transmission lines to step down power to serve distribution. So right now, the current demand as we sit here are 14 new substations at approximate cost of $20 million each, and new transformer banks at existing substations. And we need about 10 new transformers. And those transformers are between $2 and $8 million, just depends on what we're trying to achieve with that infrastructure. And in the Imperial Valley, we have a need for 3 new substations to serve additional growth. So again, the total infrastructure cost estimate is about $500 million for the substation and accompanying infrastructure. And then the generation resources necessary to serve that are in the approximately $300 million range. So that's a pretty big capital requirement. Next slide. Oh, there we go. So we've looked at a number of options because we understand that we need to find ways to facilitate that growth and development. So we've looked at our regulations and said, well, what specifically can we do to Reg 15? Regulation 15 addresses line extensions. The distribution system is kind of like Tinker Toys. You sort of build on incrementally, where the transmission system is more like an interwoven set of, I kind of liken it to a spider web. It's all interconnected to each other. Distribution facilities tend to grow in the direction of sprawl or urban development. So Reg 15, we looked at ways we could maximize developers reimbursement obligations. And then we also looked at the potential for adoption of a Regulation 24 that relates specifically to substations and how we might facilitate that growth and development. We looked at ways for reimbursement, lengthening the time by which reimbursement is available. We looked at cost sharing arrangements where we can look at the sphere of influence of facilities and find ways that we can attribute costs to multiple projects. And then we've looked at cost and aid of construction agreements. So we're looking at a number of things we can do. And those options are a great step in the right direction. But from the development stakeholder community, we're hearing it's not sufficient relief. If you need a $20 million substation, but the driver of that need is only a 20% consumer of the capacity, that's a pretty big lift for a single project to undertake on its own. So additional options under evaluation. So do nothing. We can maintain the current status, some modification to our regulations, but development will continue to pay for development. We're finding that that's not working the way we would like. And what that results in is development that is stymied, jobs that are lost, tax revenue that is not generated. So we're looking at that as being sort of, we could maintain that position, but it isn't working for the stakeholder community that has addressed the issue with the district. We can look at a rate increase across the board or a mandatory infrastructure charge, and we would go through a formal process with our board of directors, and that would be applied to all electricity consumers within the IAD footprint. No one likes to pay more for something. So we looked at what would be the realm of possible with regard to people being voluntary or voluntarily paying an additional fee or charge on their bill each month. So we're looking at a voluntary opt-out infrastructure charge. With that revenue intended and dedicated to fund infrastructure upgrades and generation resources required to facilitate additional growth. Next slide, please. So the infrastructure charge concept, again, a monthly charge to be determined, and what it will likely be is based on the known capital requirements. And those capital requirements are looking at a horizon of 2023 to 2028 to build out. So it's a 5-year time period that we would take that capital obligation, what it would cost to debt fund that, and what the carrying costs would be. So our finance department is working on what your voluntary charge or that voluntary charge would look like. It would, again, be voluntary in nature, subject to an opt-out period. But after that opt-out period, if you chose not to take an affirmative step to remove yourself, the charge would become permanent on your bill. It will be used again to fund system upgrades to facilitate that growth and development. But the IAD would consider a sunset period to ensure that the charge yielded the intended result. If we implement and it doesn't work the way that we wanted it to, the IAD board certainly has the ability to say, we've done this, it didn't work, we're going to go a different direction. This is all under pretty rigorous legal review and development by rate consultants that IAD has retained, and we're looking to expedite a solution so that we can meet stakeholder demand and sort of unleash that kind of requirement for additional growth. This obviously requires approval and adoption by the IED Board of Directors. It is agendized as an information item at its next meeting, Tuesday on the 15th. Next slide, please. So again, it's based upon our known capital requirements and the schedule that I laid out, and that schedule is from now till 2028. The known capital requirements is approximately $800 million. It'll be used to fund those infrastructure upgrades across the system and specifically dedicated towards substation and generation resources. We have done a lot of work in terms of development of criteria to ensure that viable projects are allowed to move forward and people who are entitling projects to flip with no intention of a viable or specific business moving forward would be sort of relegated a lesser place in the queue. Requires significant additional policy development and board approval, and the developer will still be required to fund project requirements apart from the substation. Next slide, please. There is a generation nexus. The additional demand drives the need for more generation. The energy industry is changing very fast, and the California market specifically are changing, and they have adopted an energy imbalance market that IED is currently in the assessment phase for. So generation resources that we deploy now need to sort of fit a dual purpose, one of which is we want to make sure that we're aligning current need for development along with our ability to bid those resources into the market. It results in an overall cost savings for IED customers, but EIM participation in any event, imbalanced market participation, will require a robust generation fleet as well as will the additional load. So those synergies can be dual purpose. And the infrastructure charge needs to be flexible enough to be deployed to defray the cost of those additional generation assets that will be needed for both load and for changes to the market as a whole. Next slide, please. So the implementation process is going to require a really robust communications plan with regard to opt-out so that we are not disproportionately impacting our low-income customers and our elderly customers that may be confused by what we're attempting to achieve. What we want is this to be genuinely voluntary. And what that will likely have to entail is also some form of an appeal process or some sort of dispute resolution after the fact, to the extent that there were those that didn't get or didn't understand what needed to be done. We want that ability to opt out to be varied and give a number of options to our website by postcard, via our call center, via the U.S. mail. We're looking at additional optionality for that as well. And implementation would be implemented around the second quarter of 2023 should the concept be approved for further development. And as all things you do as a public agency, most of you are public agencies, it's incumbent upon us when you implement a policy that policy be evaluated and tweaked as need be to make sure that it's meeting the needs of your stakeholders and your ratepayers. We want to make sure that it is being used for the intended purpose and that it is meeting the demand that drove the need for it to begin. Next slide, please. And I also wanted to be really clear that this doesn't let the developer off the hook. I know there's some concern that you're asking generalized ratepayers to fund this. What you are asking is that for that you're asking your developer to fund the proportional share of costs they're driving the need for. They're still going to be responsible for their own getaways, the lines that go into the substation, their own on-site infrastructure. They will also be required to contribute pro rata capacity charges based upon their use of the infrastructure that is built. So in order for us to deem a project viable and us to look at funding the substation site, we would need to look at some milestones that would have to make the project firm. They would need site control. You need to have your permit from your authority having jurisdiction. Your environmental document needs to be complete. You need to have demonstrated credit worthiness to get your project across the line. And then we're also looking at, do you have any PC contractors? Is your electrical engineering contractor? what steps have you taken as a developer to make your project real and viable? We want to make sure that the development occurs. We want that progress to be intelligently planned. And we're hoping that this voluntary concept will get us to the point where that growth and development can occur. Next slide, please. And happy to take questions. I know it's an awful lot of information, so.
All right, we have the first question from Ms. Gina Anastande.
Thank you. Jamie, couple of questions. I mean, being from Palm Desert, we have a very small population in IID, so my opinion probably doesn't carry as much weight, say, as La Quinta or Indio. But in my opinion, this voluntary sign-up with the ratepayers, I just don't see that going well, because most people aren't going to pay attention to the postcards. And I could use other examples we've experienced at the City of Palm Desert to get people to respond. It's a huge challenge, and I happen to just see issues with it. And then I had a question on what is energy imbalance market?
The energy imbalance market is a market structure developed by the California and monitored by the California Independent System Operator. And the energy industry is operating on 5-minute windows. It is a very complicated market where you buy and sell energy at trading hubs within the state of California and outside of the state of California on 5- and 15-minute windows. It's a day ahead market. It is going to a real time market. And for those entities that have the generation resources that you can bid in, it does defray the cost of your power that you purchased significantly. For example, there are times when the market goes negative. So IED will ramp down its own generators and we'll say, sell us your power. We get paid $1,000. We've paid up to $1,000 a megawatt to take it. So it requires your own generation fleet, a robust understanding of the market, but all of those things go to it's, and as you can tell, it's very complicated and it's very linear. And there are people that are devoted to this all day long that work at IED, not me. So you can tell, but, it's intended to lower the cost. It makes resources available. It makes them available across the board, and the pricing varies, and it gives you the opportunity to leverage your own generation fleet. You can save money by not running your own and buying in that market, but you still have to make yours available. So
that was a very good explanation. And you know, very good preschool version for me.
If you have 2 or 3 days, we could go over the whole thing on a whiteboard.
Okay. Thank you, Jamie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Do we have any other comments or members here? I have a comment and oh, sorry. Ms. Linda Evans, go ahead.
I think JB had his hand up before me.
Yeah, I was just going to make a quick clarification or answer to Councilwoman Nastandi's first question about the voluntary nature of this. I think what we're looking at is an opt-out versus an opt-in. Certainly, if there's a requirement to opt in to something, to paying more money, you're going to very likely see very little participation. I think there are some examples with Desert Community Energy about the opt-in versus opt-out on some of the programs they have. But I think what we're looking at is to try and take at least a step forward, something that is better than the status quo, which is no funding available to help kickstart some of these projects and offset and defray some of the costs that are being a bit prohibitive to a lot of the projects, particularly in the Coachella Valley. So rather than doing nothing, or rather than going to a point of having a mandatory rate increase with no way out, which is itself a challenging process under, you know, California law, I think what we're looking at is if we establish it to start out as an experiment with an opt-out provision, you certainly will likely see some folks opt out, but I think it won't be a robust enough number to really cause any concern. And certainly anything more that we would be collecting to help kickstart some of these projects is going to be a big improvement over what we're collecting now for these sort of purposes, which is nothing. Hope that
Mr. Hamby, your question. Ms. Linda Evans?
Sure. Thank you so much. Under the Energy Commission Growth and Economic Development meeting, we spoke last Friday on this and have since had some questions for IID staff, and they have kind of reworked things a little bit to present it, number one, to this group, as well as Jamie had mentioned, to the IID board. I'll say that it didn't go over so well at the ECAC meeting on Monday night. But nonetheless, again, this has been retooled a little bit to make people understand that while Indio and La Quinta were entertaining a specific type of kind of a surcharge fee specific to our jurisdictional areas, there were a lot of complexities with that. I know that both of our cities not only have some reliability and capacity issues, but we also have some projects for growth. So it's not just about communicating to customers that we're paying for new development, because everyone will still pay their fair share. But, you know, we've said it before, we've enjoyed low rates, but it's now we realize it's probably to our detriment in the long run, when we need to really enhance the infrastructure and then allow for growth as well. And, you know, from a La Quinta standpoint, just the fact that we've got to take a step in a direction, and the fact that it would be both Imperial and Riverside County wide versus a specific rate or fee increase to the bill. We'll still give people that opt-out opportunity, but hopefully we'll start garnering some of those funds. I think the details on how it's distributed or who gets what first or what money comes in from what areas where people keep opted in, those are yet to be determined. But I know IED also reported that they've already ordered two transformers, two that were needed, right? And two that they know will be needed. And those are, you know, sometimes 18 to 24 month lead time. So things have to get moving in order to project what's going on in the future. And I support this approach going forward as, again, a first step, not the solution, especially as the LAFCO study is coming out, to at least start garnering some funds in a very small way from each of the consumers to help make bigger outcomes for the entire energy system. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Evans. I have some concern on the opt-out model. And so I think if we look at, you know, data in terms of outreach, it's easiest with those who are economically doing well, right? That's what the data shows us. And we struggle reaching out to those who are on the more low-income spectrum of our communities when we do our outreach efforts. And we can even look at, you know, some of the low-income programs that we have with IID. You know, I think at this point, how if we see the economic environment, right, that everybody would really sign up for those opportunities if they knew that they were there. And we've been having a hard time reaching all these low-income communities. And so my fear is that the people that aren't going to opt out are the ones that don't know that they can opt out. And I think that's going to be more of our low-income communities. So we're going to be putting a heavier burden on our low-income communities than we are on anyone else with this model. That's my concern so far. You know, we can definitely discuss this further, but I honestly think the approach that we had previous to this, where you have the cities able to opt in or opt out themselves, I think that's a much better model there. And you know, I think both measures still make sure that you're taking any funding gathered from that community back to that community. But I think that opt out model is going to give us some of that more pressure going on to the low income communities than anyone else.
And I understand what you're saying, Mr. Chair. I also look at if we across the board did Indio or La Quinta, as we had discussed prior, there wasn't a provision in that model, at least as initially presented an approach with the dollars that we potentially could yield from even a very small percentage increase. We didn't have anything in there that would even contemplate the lower income individuals. So at least this is recognizing that, and with Jamie's comments on the fact that they have a base of those customers, low income and seniors. I know in our affordable housing units, we coordinate meetings with IID, so they go out to those communities and provide them the knowledge and resources and actually help sign them up They're working on scheduling those things to do that so we can start looking at more affordable bills for them. So I think there's, you know, it could be put in both types of models. This one at least has already considered that. And I know that ours initial didn't. So just to add that to the conversation.
Yeah. And I think my fear is that, you know, if it could go either way, right? We run the risk of going either way. You can have a lot of the low income people opt out, which would be great, right? And we save them money, but it could go the other way. And you have a lot of the higher income people opt out and the low income people don't get the message. And now we're putting even higher of a burden than our previous plan would. That's my concern. So, but again, we can still look at this and fine tune and see what we can. But at the moment, I think I like the previous model that we had where the cities themselves altogether can opt in or opt out. Do we have any other comments from any members before we go back to Jamie? All right, Jamie, go ahead.
This is all really, really helpful input, because what you want when you look to craft a policy and implement it is that implementation succeed. So a couple of things. From a policy perspective, the state of California is going on a number of fronts to enhance its renewable portfolio, reduce its greenhouse gas. So you have the California Air Resources Board, the zero emission vehicles. So all of those things require much more robust infrastructure. And I think that Mr. Martinez highlighted this at the Energy Consumer Advisory Committee. So to the extent we do build more infrastructure, that benefits your entire customer base. And the sale of more electrons, IED is required as a publicly owned utility to collect a non-bypassable public benefits charge. To the extent there's more PBC funds collected, that's more that we can use to deploy an offset. Mr. Ortiz, you raised excellent points, because that is the customer segment that we do not want to negatively impact. You don't want a cost shift from one customer base to another. So to the extent you have additional public funds, you can deploy for more low-income programs, a rate offset, it potentially an offset of that actual charge on bill. I think that we want to look at what the host of possibilities are so that we make sure there's not disproportionate rate sort of sticker shock or charge shock to any of our customers or impact one over another. The goal is growth and development. It is certainly not to do that on a customer segment least capable of dealing with that. So, and that's why one of the things I mentioned was when we do the implementation, and we do go to churches, we do go to schools, we do go to, and clearly we could, we're not reaching everyone, but that's certainly the goal. We have those public funds for a purpose and we want them to be used for that purpose. But the more electrons we sell, the more public benefits money, that pot gets larger to do more things. So I want to make sure that we're not, I make sure that that's out there. And then the other thing is, I think at a point, the infrastructure has to grow, because California's policies are dictating that. And I think if we can do that incrementally, it's better than it being all sort of foisted upon us at the same time. I think these are all excellent comments. I think that this helps us craft better sort of after the fact policies. If we have someone that should have opted out and it's clear that this is a hardship for them, there has to be a process within IED, or at least we have to take that into consideration, that there are exceptions to every rule and that there be a mechanism by which we can provide them some relief, or we get them an offset through others, some other resource. Because that's certainly not the intent. But if we don't raise these before the policy is implemented, then we can't sort of mitigate it on the back end. So I appreciate all of the comments, and we want to make sure that you know that we're available to answer additional questions, and appreciate your time so very much today.
Thank you, Jamie. Any other comments before we move on to the next item?
We didn't talk about the timeline in terms of presenting to IED board next week and then what happens to follow.
So we do have an information item on the agenda for next week. I believe that there is, Director Hamby, I defer to you. I believe there's the potential for a special meeting for other purposes, and we were going to see if we couldn't piggyback this item on that agenda as well.
That's true. And I think in addition to next Tuesday's meeting, we're also looking to have it on our Coachella Valley Energy Commission meeting next Thursday afternoon. We had it at ECAC, had it here. So we're looking for as many opportunities to air this and get as much public comment as that is in real time shaping what we're looking at here. But to answer your question, Mayor Evans, we're looking for information now. And then if we're in a position where there's enough comfort to move forward, we'd like to maybe have it in for consideration by the end of the month or early December.
Thank you. And thank you for, you know, hearing out our concerns and taking those to the board. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item. We have the contract for regional PM10 street sweeping, and we have Emmanuel Martinez.
Good afternoon, honorable chair members of the committee. This is regarding the contract for regional PM10 street sweeping program. As you all know, we presented this in the past. We are in a non-attainment area for PM10. I'll quickly go through these slides since we've seen them before. This is a public health and safety issue, improving air quality. I've shown this image in the past to give you some perspective on what the size of PM10 looks like in relation to other particulates. And obviously, we all know that this is really bad for your health and our lungs. So it is a public health and safety program. Currently, we are under contract with M&M Street Sweeping. They are sweeping all our regional streets and roadways in the Coachella Valley. As you may recall, we did give them a 6-month contract extension from June 30th to December 31 to give us sample time to finish off the PM10 efficiency and effectiveness study that we did with E-Corp. As you recall, in that study, we got funded by South Coast Air Quality Management District to the tune of $1.1 million. We did draw down the first $220 million. And in order to draw the $880,000, which is $220 per year for the remainder of the grant, we need to complete the study, which has already been submitted to AKMD and it's going through final approval. And we did get funding for that study as well as part of the grant to make some updates to our program and analyze the effectiveness of the program. Some of the key findings, just to highlight, collect more data. As it relates to the tonnage that is being collected. And so we'll be weighing trucks. We'll be incorporating GPS tracking devices to improve the management and coordination of the program and also making sure that we're adhering to AKMD Rule 1186 and ensuring that all equipment used for this program is natural gas equipment. Again, some of the additions to the program based on the study, Sunrise Way and Palm Springs will now be added. Also East Mesquite as well. And in Rancho Mirage, we have Los Alamos and Duval Road. And then in Indio, we have Avenue 50 and Madison Street there that will be added to the program. Those were all based on average daily traffic counts in each of the cities. So we did put out a request for proposals. It was a qualification-based proposal evaluation, and we comprised a selection. We put up a selection committee comprised of staffs from each of the cities you see here below, and we did get two proposals, one from M&M and another one from Clean Streets. After review and evaluation, the selection committee unanimously selected Clean Street to take over the contract beginning January 1st of 2023. Their proposal came in at $763,573 per year. It's a 3-year contract with a 2-1-year extension as options. So we did open that in August. We closed in September. The selection committee made the recommendation, and we are here before you today to provide you the update. And we are today's recommendation, we hope to take this to the executive committee at their meeting of December 5th. And again, our recommendation is to authorize the executive director to enter into an agreement for regional street sweeping services with Clean Streets for 3 years and an option for 2 1-year extensions at the amount there that's indicated. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Do we have any questions from our board members? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Looking to move to approval.
And a second.
All right, Ranjan Mirage will second it.
Ranjan Mirage, thank you. So we have a motion from Ms. Linda Evans and a second from Mr. Charlie Townsend. Everybody in favor, can you please raise your hand, say aye.
Aye.
Do we have any abstentions?
Aye.
Abstention from, was that an abstention or approval, Mr. Gonzalez?
Oh, I was an aye. I'm sorry, I was delayed.
Oh, okay. No worries. Thank you. Any opposed? Okay, seeing none, motion passes. Also, just a note, Supervisor Perez has reached out and said he apologizes for not being able to join us. He's having a meeting with Secretary Crowfoot from the California Natural Resources Agency. So talking about the Salton Sea, so something very important to us. But we'll go ahead and move on to the next item. We have opportunities for sustainable urban greening and heat mitigation initiatives by Kenyon Potter. Do we have Mr. Potter with us?
I think he's on mute.
There. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
Committee members, I would like to present our staff report on urban greening and heat mitigation. As you can see on this graph, the Coachella Valley is heating up. The average temperatures are going up, way up, and the summers are getting longer. Way longer, nearly half the year is projected by the end of the century. So, meanwhile, the canopy cover in the Coachella Valley is nice, but it's very significantly. The range is from approximately 3%, less than 3%, to over 20% in some areas. Why trees? They offer many benefits. Shade and shelter from the sun. Energy efficiency. Environmental. More livability and many others. In the Coachella Valley, the three most common types of trees are palm trees, so let's compare trees. Obviously, palm trees have aesthetic and beautiful, but I would like to get into some of the other parameters. Shade trees have much more shade, obviously, and roughly about three times. They also have denser shade than palm trees. And here is one example of another key benefit, and that's they use less water. Shade trees actually use less water than palm trees. So here's the shade for each tree, approximate water use. And if you do the calc, as you can see that the shade is given back from a typical shade tree than a palm tree. Recent projects in the Coachella Valley, there's several of them, but the most recent one, Grapefruit Boulevard, urban greening in Coachella. And also just announced and being implemented right now is IID's program called Tree for All. It has a series of tree events in the Coachella Valley and also the Imperial Valley. The first one's next weekend. Anyway, it's a drive-through event where each resident is able to reserve a tree from four species and also using an online app, virtually plant the tree in their yard to assure that it's not too close to a wall or their house. And they're giving guidance also. and then they go pick up the tree as a drive-by event. And after within a week, the first event was sold out and demand is high. One or two other notes, IID, the program manager informed us that they're going to release, distribute approximately 1200 trees this year alone, 200 trees roughly per event in Coachella Valley. And then next year, they're going to come back in September and distribute more trees, under their, funding that they have available through their, within the IID territory. So this is an interesting program and there's some real benefits about, it. But we're looking at various opportunities for funding and also, to provide urban greening in the valley. Anyway, thank you very much. Oh, one last thing. Trees also benefit us, obviously, to improve heat island, reduce heat island effects. This is an example from mid-moderate weather. It's not actually the hottest part of the summer that these photographs were taken. But as you can see, there's a 13-degree differential due to urban greening around this heat island.
Chair, if I could step in, too. The information we're providing isn't rocket science. We all know shade trees provide more shade than palm trees. We all know the benefits of trees. We're trying to be sensitive about water use, particularly in the desert, but particularly in a drought and perhaps in conditions that are continuing to be dry over the future. And I'd asked Kenyon to put together this information and put it forward as an information item because I know there's a lot of interest. And as the hottest place in the state and maybe the hottest place in the nation and one of the hottest places on earth, to just hear that we're going to get hotter over the next decades. And I don't know if that's 2 degrees, 4 degrees, or 8 degrees, but all of it sounds too hot for me. What can we do? And we're not going to solve climate change, whether it's going fast or slow or should go slower or faster, but we can provide some local benefits through things like planting trees. And we know there are programs like IIDs, there are programs at CBWD, and each of your cities has programs. I wanted to get a sense from the committee. Is this something that, you know, CVAG should engage in? And as we look at tens of millions of dollars of climate resiliency dollars coming from the state, you know, should we think big picture here? Should we be looking for millions of dollars to support all of you in getting trees and shade structures up in your community? So a discussion item that I know that's near and dear to your chair as well and various hats he wears. So with that, Chair, we'd love to hear your thoughts.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. You know what? Let me open it up for our board members first, and then I'll finish it off. But Ms. Nestande, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Tom, yes, I'm very supportive of a tree program and would advocate it at our City of Palm Desert. And this might not be quite the time, but it did bring up, as you the presentation was mentioning, the concrete jungle and the heating effect. You know, and part of that is also we're doing a balancing act with water usage, but mm-hmm. pulling up all the green grass also isn't a solution, not all of it. You know, there needs to be a balance. And what I'm hearing from the constituents and the media, that there seems to be a misconception about our water here. It's my understanding that Coachella Valley Water District has done a great job of managing our water. We have the natural aquifer, and our water needs, our drought isn't as bad as, ironically, the coastal areas like Los Angeles. And that actually CBWD sells excess water that we have to them. And maybe at some point we get a presentation from CBWD and get a better explanation on that as well. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's probably a longer conversation, and the water district members here have a lot more insight than I do. And CBWD, if they were here, I know would say there is no such thing as excess water, and the water that is transferred to MWD is essentially a balancing act among state water versus water from the Colorado River. And whether we believe to have enough water or not enough, one reason we brought up how much water is being used is I think we all want to, you know, not use it wastefully. And I know, Mr. Standy, you feel the same way. Let's not waste our water, but let's use it wisely. And let's do it in a way that provides perhaps the most shade or grass where people could use it, not in the middle of streets where nobody could use it. And so that's what we're trying to really focus on here as an organization, and I think really as a region.
Yeah, and you know what, Ms. Standy, as you're mentioning, some people are still going to want to have their grass, right, if they have kids, if they have dogs, and some special uses for that grass. And if you're able to plant a tree over your grass, you'll save a lot of water, right?
Mm-hmm.
All these things are going to flow together well. And I think long term, right, if here we discuss a lot about our energy requirements, our water requirements, and this is all going to play together in our long term. You know, if we start planting trees now, maybe in 20 years, that'll save us on energy infrastructure, right? Because all of our homes will be getting that shade from their trees and lowering their energy consumption and also their water consumption, right? Because in 20 years, right now, we're doing pretty well with our water. We're doing okay because we have that huge aquifer, but all around us is not the same, right? So that Colorado water that we're replenishing our aquifer with might not be here for a very long time. So we have to start planning now and being careful about that water use. And I think this is going to be a great way to also bring in, you know, that conservation. A lot of times we focus conservation on the outside of our cities and on our mountains, and this is going to be bringing it inside and bringing it into our neighborhoods and into our communities, and also bringing a help to the ecology, right? So one of the suggestions I would have for our staff is also looking at not just how much shade we're providing, but also looking around our desert and seeing what species are kind of fading out. You know, one of the things that I've heard recently is that mesquite trees, that they're kind of getting harder and harder to find in our environment. So we could actually help here, right, by planting those mesquite trees in our neighborhoods, in our communities, and starting that propagation back up. And hopefully that'll spread out to our outskirts as well. Mr. Vincent Gonzalez, I saw you had your hand raised. Would you like to add a comment there?
Yeah, I'm driving, so I don't know. It's in and out. Are we specifically talking residential or even in the community as far as the shade trees?
It could be anywhere. And I know IID's program is, I think, really targeted towards residential. In fact, maybe it's entirely residential as far as I know. That said, part of my mischievous thinking, Mr. Gonzalez, is the state's going to have a whole bunch of money out on the table in the spring, and they're going to be talking about climate resiliency. I can't, again, think of a better place in the state to address climate resiliency. And if we could plant trees better in commercial areas and more in residential areas and along public streets and other places, we'll plant them anywhere we can and get the money to do so.
Well, I ask that because shade trees go hand in hand with the homeless people hiding out underneath them. Mm-hmm. Now, La Quinta, you guys don't seem to have much of an issue. Palm Desert's doing very good, but you know, I'm in Palm Springs in Cathedral City, and we have a huge homeless problem going on, to the fact that I've seen shade trees being cut down and removed. Now, they're great for the environment and great for everything else, but because of what's been going on in Palm Desert or Palm Springs and Cathedral City, you know, the shade trees are just providing a nuisance for the homeless people. We've had issues at our tribal building right there off of Dinah Shore, where we've had to remove people. I don't know if you've noticed the large ones that are like by the railroads, what's going on there. There's others in Thousand Palms. I mean, there are huge encampments developing. So I would just keep that in mind. I think, you know, they're great to have, but unfortunately they're providing shade to, you know, some people that are not desirable in certain communities. And, you know, and even in some parts, it's even affecting residential.
So
yeah, and our
homeless just bringing that up.
Thank you.
And to elaborate, if I might, Mr. Chair, and those sorts of trees that I think are being referred to are tamarisk, that I think we want to get rid of anyway for water consumption and everything else. And those trees aren't providing a lot of shade. They're providing a place to hide or perhaps, you know, sit underneath. And so what we're really talking about are those, you know, big canopy trees where it provides shade. Yeah, well,
I'm referencing both. I mean, the tamarisk ones along the railroad are definitely a nuisance, and they're trying to get rid of them anyways because of the water consumption. But pretty much in Palm Springs area and anywhere,
the parks,
any shade provided, even if it's a bus stop, is being taken over right now. So yeah,
that's definitely a
I don't think that's species related. It's shade related.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely big, part of that bigger issue there. Mr. Hamby, you have a comment there?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Just kind of commenting on the Tom Kirk's question there about is this something that should be pursued? I think absolutely, as noted, with all the state and federal monies that are available, that this is certainly one of the things earmarked for. I think that would be a great thing for CBAG to go both feet in. Just for context with IIDNR program, I felt last year that this was something we could do. We had some available revenues through the public benefits charge and felt that this would be a great way of meeting some of those standards of energy conservation and others that are part of that whole program and that funding. So we started our program from scratch. We did kind of experimented a little bit differently in the Imperial and Coachella Valleys. Within, I think, like 4 or 5 days, we had our first tree event in the Coachella Valley completely sold out, as was noted in the presentation. And that first one's taking place in Coachella on Saturday. We're also working with City of La Quinta and City of Indio to have 2 other tree events in the next couple months here. And this is just kind of starting things out. We're doing another program here where it's not a drive-by, but they'll plant it in your yard here in the Imperial Valley. There'll be larger trees, but fewer of them. So we're trying some different things out and would be happy to collaborate and share some of our notes that we've learned starting from scratch here in the Imperial Valley. And I think the benefits here all around are very valuable. We put it together a website, iid.com/treeforall, for those that are interested in either signing up for a tree or reading about some of the benefits of it. But certainly, I think with the energy conservation benefits, you can save up to 20% on your energy bills by having some trees around your home. And then just figure taking a walk sometime. Would you rather take a walk through a street in the middle of the day where there's no trees around or one that's has a full canopy? It makes a big difference and encourages people to go outside, creates great habitat, well-being, and health benefits. So I think it's certainly a well worth it program if CBAG was interested, and we'd be happy to share any notes and be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Mr. Townsend?
Yes, thank you. I agree with Mr. Hamby, and I certainly agree with Tom, and I definitely agree that CBAG should go after those funds so that they can contribute to trees in all of the 9 cities who would offer this to their residents and their businesses. I also noticed that Costco parking lot in the desert is changing and putting in more shade trees in the parking lot. So they're aware of it. We're all aware of it. And I certainly think that CBAG should have the direction to go after these funds.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend. Now I wanted to go back to Mr. Hamby's comments. One of the things that hadn't come up before is the habitat topic, right? That it also is providing habitat for our native bird species as well. So I'm sure we all enjoy having them around. So that's another important topic there. Do we have any other comments before we move on to the next topic? Mr. Dennis Woods?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone, for your input. I would agree with what's been said, and I would support CBAG moving forward on everything that I just want to add a couple comments that haven't been said. I appreciated the amount of water that each tree uses. As we create a palette that would really work for the desert. But I think we need to go a little bit further in capturing these funds and helping people make the right decisions by doing the research that may need to be done. And that may be some of these trees are very soft and they do not hold up in the wind. So if you were to put them in a parking lot, I'm sure a lot of owners are worried about liability. Some of them drop droppings. We have to be concerned about that. I totally support putting trees in all of that if we can, but we really have to help people make the right decision. And I think we need some research in doing that of what works for the desert, not only from water use, and providing shade and habitat and everything we've heard, but also from a liability issue on all of that. And so I would just ask that we add that in, to the research that we do as we apply for these grants. We may also want to add in, not just trees, but maybe we apply for funding for some sort of decorative, creative shading of walkways that people could apply for from the state. It doesn't necessarily have to be a tree. It could be something else for our resiliency and to maintain it. So I would actually ask that we add that as well and what that might look like as we apply for some of these grants. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And great points on that too. And I'm actually working the nonprofit, Friends of the Desert Mountains here, and we're trying to come up with the first Coachella Valley native planting guide and to see, you know, that would kind of categorize some of these things that you're mentioning as well. But that's something that we haven't included and that we will look forward. We're looking at working with some of the experts from around the valley as well and seeing, you know, what would you not want to plant in your garden, right? What's going to attract things that you don't want in your yard, or what's going to, like you said, create liability issues. So great point there as well. Mr. Kurt, did you have a comment there?
We will take your comments and very thoughtful ones at that, build on or perhaps partner with IID. I'm really impressed, and I know our staff is, with what they've already done and some of the thoughtful advice they're providing to homeowners as they hand out these trees. I would just encourage Mr. Hamby not to advertise those events in La Quinta or Indio too widely, because people from Palm Desert and Rancho Mirage might show up and take some of those trees. With the consensus from this group, we will move forward. We'll see what kind of funding opportunities and particularly work with IID. And we've already sat down with CBWD. I know Mission Springs has been all kind of out in front on thinking about desert landscaping. So we'll certainly work with you, Ms. Wright, as well, and your staff and Desert Water Agency. So you'll hear more about this, and particularly if we could find a good funding source for it.
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. And we'll go ahead and move on to item 6D, Federal and State Legislative Advocacy in 2023.
Good afternoon. Again, Emmanuel Martinez, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. This is the Federal and State Legislative Advocacy, and specifically the platform, which off the bat, I will mention, it does include trees and tracking the state's climate portfolio, specifically climate resiliency and heat mitigation. By way of background, the Ferguson Group represents us in Washington, D.C., the political group in Sacramento. Our legislative platform, as you may all recall, was first adopted in February of this year. We engaged and monitored our priorities based on that platform at both levels, and now we're providing you an update to that platform. It is comprised of a few categories, which is transportation, energy and environment, homeless and housing, public safety, broadband, and also fighting for fairness, which is under the state section of our platform, which relates to issues like the Calum viral screen or other metrics that are not favorable to the Coachella Valley when competing for funding. Some of the updates in this platform, there wasn't a lot of variability year over year. We expect some of the issues from this year to carry over to next year, but some of the updates are stronger language regarding protecting local control, and funding and project prioritization, stronger language regarding Calum viral screen since it was updated, and making sure that there are other metrics that the state uses that allow for the Coachella Valley to compete more favorably. Also, the Inflation Reduction Act and programs that are implemented, we included some language tracking those. Again, I mentioned off the bat heat mitigation and climate resiliency, trees. That is also an update in there, and also for allowing more flexibility in local funding mechanisms. The adoption process is Very simple. It's going to be going to all the committees, transportation, energy, and environment here today, then public safety and homeless. Each will be providing input in, to the platform on their respective category. And then finally, we'll get this comprehensive update to the executive committee at their meeting. So we are seeking your comments, feedbacks. Doesn't necessarily have to be today, but happy to take down those comments or at a later time before we get to executive committee. So with that, that is our update on the legislative platform for the upcoming year, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Do we have any comments or questions from our board members? I have a suggestion, and that would be, I didn't see anything specifically on hydrogen, and maybe looking at maybe supporting, you know, the infrastructure for hydrogen production or hydrogen stations, seeing how that's going to come up here pretty soon. I know they're already working on the big rigs moving to hydrogen and some of the larger vehicles moving to hydrogen. So that's the only suggestion I have. And I also actually wanted to see if we could maybe bring back an item for the future. And looking at one of the things that I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around is when we look at the infrastructure needed in electrification, like let's say if we were to look at the Coachella Valley and looking at the long-term cost of electrification, right? We're going to have to put in all these lines, all these chargers, and then maintain them over time and keep replacing them and upgrading them. At what point does it make it more viable to start moving towards hydrogen? Because you don't have those infrastructure costs, right? So at some point, is it going to make more sense to start incentivizing the production of hydrogen or the, you know, hydrogen stations, something of that sort? That's just, but maybe staff can help me come up with something that we can get a little more tangible, because I know it's kind of a pretty broad subject, and maybe we can work with SCAG on that as well. I know that they probably have a lot of data that we could use. But that's something that I've been thinking about recently. Do we have any other comments from our board members on the legislative policy or advocacy? Nope, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Martinez. And we'll go ahead and move on to the next item, which is our information items. And, you know, seeing that we're running a little bit late on time, we'll go ahead and let you guys read those at home. We have a lot of items on there. Do we have any public comments on non-agenda items?
Chair, we have no raised hands and we received no written comments.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. We have announcements. Next meeting is going to be February 9th, you said, right, Mr. Kirk?
Yes.
February 9th. And the next meeting of the executive committee will be Monday, December 5th at 4:30. I do have a few notes. Let me get to them here. Actually, no. I think the only thing I wanted to say was thank you to Mr. Dennis Woods and Mr. Charlie Townsend. This is our last meeting with us. Really enjoyed having you guys' opinions here and being able to work with you guys on this committee. So thank you very much. And we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you, guys. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Great conversations.